Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Welcome to the Childcare Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio with me, nobody again. Tasha Johnson is in the Explorations or Learning Intergalactic Headquarters Dining Hall. Hello, Tasha.
Aloha.
Lisa Murphy is in Rochester, New York.
Hello.
And Josie is back with us with our library discussion book recommendation. Josie from Kansas City is here. How you doing, Josie?
I'm great.
Shall I try to do the theme song again?
Please.
And I'm still a little bit liquored up on Belgian beer. Josie's here with a book recommendation and some literacy conversation.
Yay!
Yay, Jeff.
There we go. I'm gonna leave for a little bit. Josie, what are you recommending this time? Oh, everybody just made a face on me on the Zoom. I'll be back. Josie, what do you got for us this time?
I'm recommending Don't Play With Your Food by Bob Shea. And this book is fairly new. It was written in 2014. It is about a monster named Buddy, and Buddy is really hungry, and he finds some bunnies, and he tells these bunnies that he is going to eat them.
And oh, I the love bunnies, it already.
it's fun. And they're, the bunnies say, "Oh no, you're not going to eat me. We were about to make you're not going to eat us. We were about to make cupcakes." And Buddy wants to know what cupcakes are. So the bunnies teach him how to make cupcakes. And he's so full after eating these cupcakes that he cannot eat the bunnies. So he says, okay, I'll eat you tomorrow. So the next day he comes to eat them. And they say, oh, we're gonna take you swimming. And he has such a good time with them that he's too tired to eat them. So he's going to eat them the next day. And this goes on and on and on until the end, and I'll leave that as a surprise for you, but it is safe for children. but these pictures are very, very bright and colorful. Bob Shea is he's an author and an illustrator, and all of his books almost have a trying to think of the style, kind of like a 1960s color, you know, like the color, think about like cartoons from the 60s and 70s, kind of like olive tones, kind of muted. The pictures all look like that. Here, let me hold up, see if you guys can describe it better than I can.
Nobody on the podcast can see what you're showing us.
I'm showing you guys, and you're helping me describe it.
A Sneetches comes to mind with the greens there, and then Scooby-Doo came to mind also.
Scooby-Doo, thank you. That's what I was trying to think. Scooby-Doo. The illustrations that he does remind me of that, but they're really fun. Mm-hmm. This book is great for voices. You don't have to do voices, but voices always make a book more fun.
True. It sounds like it might be one of those predictable books, too, where you're, as the adult, you could be like, and do you think he ate them that day?
Exactly.
You know, like, yeah. I'm not familiar with that one.
I bet you could, I mean, include the kids and maybe they could think of other things the bunnies could have done to entertain the what was it again?
The monster.
The monster. Yeah. I was thinking dragon. It's like, no, it's not a dragon. It's just some monster. Yeah.
Buddy the monster.
I have some Scooby-Doo trivia.
Of course you do. Is that what you went away to look up?
Do you know the main characters in Scooby-Doo are based on the main characters in the television show from the early 60s, The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis?
No, I did not know that.
Maynard G. Krebs is the Shaggy. The role model of Shaggy. Dobie Gillis is kind of who what's his name? You know, the guy with the
Fred.
Fred was based on. Thelma was based on Zelda. And then what's her name? You know, Daphne was based on.
Daphne.
She was in the first season. Toosie Weld played her. You know, that character. What was her name? Anyway, that's and that's the thing. So there you go. That's a little bit of too many of our listeners are too damn young to. No,
I never watched the Dobie Gillis one.
I'm totally watching Dobie Gillis right fucking now.
The book
now, but what?
No, I was gonna say the book that Josie just told us about, Don't Play With Your Food, and she said she was gonna wait with the surprise ending, made me think of the book Wolf's Coming. Do you know that book, Josie?
I love Wolf's Coming.
So do I, because it totally looks like everybody's gonna, oh no, he's gonna eat us, oh no, he's gonna eat us, and then at the end, boom, no spoiler alert. So there's two book recommendations for you that sound like they might have kind of followed that same kind of format.
Similar, yes.
Similar format. And on our last episode with you, Josie, you said that there was something that would be its own podcast. Do we got time to transition into that? Or is it really like its own?
I think we can. I actually took it from you, believe it or not.
Me?
And I was reading over your storytelling presentation that you do, your literacy one. Oh, gosh, hold on. I'm trying to find my notes really fast. Stall, stall, stall.
Talk amongst you talked yourselves. About oh, how
to, you talked about how to pick a good book.
Oh yeah, Membox.
And I got to thinking about that, and just the idea that don't assume that just because a book is old doesn't mean it's bad, that kids today won't like it, because I think sometimes we forget about those classics as we're choosing books. And just because you can get a book from the library for free or from a garage sale for 5 cents, cheap doesn't make a good book.
Amen, sister.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
I have a big issue with that. Yeah, totally. Just because it was free doesn't mean you should be reading it.
And I think sometimes because we don't, if you're working with children, we usually aren't making a lot of money. You buy a bunch of, I hate to say it, but cheap crap because you can afford it. And it's a lot of it tends to be commercial. And it's just junk. There are so many better books out there.
Well, and that's why Jeff and I put together the book audit, how to do a book audit. And you know, what it comes down to is that if it's linked to a TV show or a movie, and that was its only reason for existence. Like this, I think probably could be its own episode to unpack with you too. Because I'll often get people that are my age who are like, but it was a book before it was a movie. Granted, okay, I get that. But which experience was in the child's life first? Did they know the book after the movie? Did they know the book first and then saw the movie? You know, or did the whole thing just exist as a marketing strategy for a new TV show that's going to be showing up? And I think doing a little bit of that detective work prior, before just making a blanket judgment, like, oh, there's a book that goes with a movie, so it's bad. Charlotte's Web, if they've never seen the movie, that's a good book, you know? So don't be so black and white with that.
Yeah. I do want to give the caveat that if as a parent, if my child really wants to read this book about Barbie or Peppa Pig or whatever character it is, I'm not going to say no, because I'm not going to turn a child away from reading.
Exactly.
But use that as your springboard into other, perhaps more quality literature that isn't just trying to sell you some toys.
And I'm going to reinforce that 100%, Josie, because I mean, I'll stand on my soapbox when I'm talking to people about this topic, but then I'll also, like you, that caveat, I call it the asterisk of clarification. If the only book that this kid has fallen in love with is that Spider-Man goes to the mall, I'm not going to take that away. I mean, that would be stupid, you know, or that, you know, whatever the book might be, I might particularly be like, oh, shoot, I'm not going to lead with that. But if that's the only book your mama ever gave you, you know, and you don't see her anymore, that's not on me to make a judgment call on that. And like you just said, I'm going to use it as a springboard. The other thing that I suggest is finding the theme. And if you need assistance, this is probably something that a librarian could help you with. If you have kids that are only attracted to those commercialized books, maybe having somebody assist you in finding what is the element that perhaps the child is intrigued by, and could I potentially offer something that's not a commercialized book to meet them where they are, but then showing that there's another option, right?
Yeah, no, I think that is excellent. I mean, I'm just going with the Spider-Man example. Fine, read the Spider-Man books, read the Batman books. But there's a lot of books that are about superheroes that maybe aren't like, you know, Marvel or DC superheroes. That might be something you look at, but go past that. What is it they're liking? Are they liking the fights? Well, I've got some great books about ninjas for young kids.
What's the connection point?
Yeah.
It could even be the paneling. I found that out once about the kid. It was that, I don't know the proper comic language for that.
I know what you're talking about.
It was that it was written not in a narrative format, but it was written in boxes like a comic book, and that's what the kid actually was intrigued by.
And there are tons of books like that. So yeah, when you really take that extra time to investigate what is appealing to the child about that particular book, we're all smart people. You can figure out other things they might like too.
What's Spider-Man going to the mall for?
I don't know. I have a book on the shelf right now called Spider-Man Goes to, or Swings Through Europe.
Spider-Man Swings Through Europe. That's the movie.
That's not a book. You just made that up.
I did not.
No, because the movie that just came out is Spider-Man in the UK. So that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, Spider-Man visits all the different countries.
Oh, I don't get out much, so I don't.
Called Far From Home, I think.
San Diego comes to mind, and where's Spider-Man?
Where in the world is Spider-Man? Josie, since you're a librarian, I have a library confession.
Sure.
Back in the day, and I'm talking probably early 80s, when you were
not born.
In her mother's eye.
No.
Back in the early 80s, our library had a drop box where you could return things. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I checked out a record album. This was, you're too young to know what this is. This was it was made of vinyl. It was before CDs. They played music. And I checked one out, and I listened to the shit out of it, and then I returned it to the Dropbox.
Uh-oh.
And it, because it was on the sunny side of the street, apparently, it warped, and the album got ruined in the Dropbox, because apparently they left it there for fucking days when it was right in front of the library. And then they tried to make me pay for the album that, because
did you write a letter to your elected officials?
you're not supposed to put albums in the Dropbox because they can warp because of the heat, because the sun beats on the metal Dropbox and warps the album. But I'm like 9 years old, so how the fuck do I know this happens? And that may have been the last time I went to the library. No, not exactly, but probably close to it. Do the libraries still have record albums?
Oh, I'm sorry. Drop boxes? Is that what you're going for? No.
Do they still have drop boxes? Do they still have record albums?
We still have drop boxes, yes. Some libraries still have albums.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I won't be going there.
You usually have to use an interlibrary loan and have it sent from a different part of the country.
Forget across town. We need to call a different state.
In all seriousness, we do have a lot of older patrons that come in. They have drive older cars and they want cassette tapes. Mm-hmm. And the average library does not have cassette tapes on hand. But
so if people are getting rid of their cassette tapes, they should consider donating them to the library then? For those older patrons or...
Library donations are a tricky subject.
I was wondering, yeah.
Did you have a question, Jeff?
No, I just wanted to confess.
The library that I grew up using in Livermore, California, where I got my very first library card, when I remember that, like it happened yesterday, you could check out artwork. And I remember being like 6, 7 years old, going to the library and checking out books and art to hang up in my bedroom.
Whoa, wait, time out. So Lisa Murphy like checked out her fucking Monet?
like prints of it, nothing major, but it was like framed stuff. Some of it was like oil paints and you could check them out just like a book.
Well, Lisa, that is actually something that providers should check into, because a lot of libraries have interesting collections that you can check out. There are libraries
The secret collections?
Like the secret menu at McDonald's.
I just found out about this not that long ago because somebody came in asking if we had fishing poles and fishing equipment. And I said, what? No. And somebody said, oh yeah, it's at this branch.
What? So, like,
even in the system, I didn't realize we had fishing poles that could be checked out. But I mean, I've heard of tools. Some libraries will put together theme kits for homeschool families, but really anybody can use them, that has like books and puppets and like actual toys that can be checked out.
The Rochester, New York here has a very extensive toy lending library at one of our branches. And it's a huge, huge, it's actually one of the model toy lending library, toy lending systems. I don't know what the right word would be, but it's used as a model. It's so successful.
So in the show notes, shall I mention the library secret menu? Is that how do I describe this? Is that what it is?
I guess. And I mean, it really shouldn't be a secret. These things should be advertised a little bit better. But just go in and say, what do you have? What do you have for checkout that's not books?
Might be surprised. What do you have that I might like?
Seeds. Seeds are another big thing. A lot of libraries are having a collection of seed packets. So you can go in and check out these seed packets to plant in your garden. And a lot of times it's a pay it forward thing. You know, you grow these things, so bring in some seeds of your own. But
what?
It's pretty cool. That's kind of cool. Things.
Who knew? I didn't know.
What? No, what?
So Jeff, you're gonna have to leave the house tomorrow and go find out what the library has.
But our library is overrun with homeless dudes who smell like pee.
Well,
is that a problem? Would you say
everyone?
Well, if
so
I
you
stay
just
home,
carry your perfume handkerchief with you. At
you know
in.
What? If I stay home, Tasha and the dogs don't smell like pee.
It's true.
Well, hello, Slinky.
So I'm just saying. Hey, Angie, at our local library. Sorry, you have to deal with the homeless guys that smell like pee. That's kind of annoying. That kind of brought
is this
the show
a
down.
Is this a big well no is this a big issue? I mean, do librarians get together and talk about this kind of stuff?
It's got to totally be a huge issue.
Oh, homelessness in the library is like one of the number one things that librarians are trying to figure out how to support that population. It's one of those a lot of libraries are looking at things now like portable showers, and some libraries are being built adjacent to homeless shelters. A lot of libraries are now, they've now got Narcan behind the counter in case somebody ODs in the library. It's a thing.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, perhaps, I mean, there's a lot of people that are saying, hey, wait a second, you're asking me to be a social worker, and I am not trained as a social worker. So, I mean, this is a very hot button issue, but whether or not it should be the librarian's responsibility, it's becoming our responsibility, but this is.
Well, hold on, Josie.
The whole thing.
But Josie, we can link that back up probably even to the teaching profession, right? You know, especially in the last 10 to 15 years that, you know, no, we're not trained to also be family therapists and social workers and nutritionists but for whatever reason, it's kind of become a part of our job. Not to say that we act in that capacity.
Sure.
Clearly we don't, but it's impossible, I think, to do numerous jobs nowadays without realizing that what you thought potentially you were signing up for, the job description perhaps is a little broader.
Changed without your permission.
Realizing
and that's true. And it's one of those things you can sit there until you're blue in the face and say, this isn't my job. This isn't what I wanted to do. But that doesn't change the fact that when you go to work that day, you are dealing with these issues. It is your job, whether or not you like it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, we've got a friend who used to be a mom in our family childcare program who works at our local library, and that's one of the, I mean, that's something she's got to deal with every day in our community that has about 80, maybe 100,000 people, and the library is being overrun, and when you have dudes pleasuring themselves in the magazine department of the library, it kind of makes it uncomfortable for people to show up with their family childcare program.
It does. Although I will say, in all fairness, I will say 90% of the homeless population that comes into our branch are very respectful.
Absolutely.
They mm-hmm. just need a place to get out of the elements.
Yeah. Yeah,
they know we're there to help them. So
totally.
I don't want people to be scared of the library because there are homeless people there.
Absolutely, absolutely, I agree.
And yes, there are occasional problems.
Yeah, and that 10% can be off-putting.
That is true. I mean, I won't disagree with you there.
Yeah, interesting world we live in.
I called the police twice in the past month for things, so I'm not disagreeing with you, but. That's something that,
yeah, I mean,
the larger library system is going to have to, library world is going to have to figure out. And just like childcare workers, when you show up to work, you help the people, you meet the people who are there that need you that day where they're at.
Yeah. And you deal with things as they are in the moment. That's all you can do. And that seems to be a good place to wrap this episode up. This has been another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill. You can find Josie on Instagram at
Josie and Juliet
and Josie Reed.
And she's also the main character of the Miss Becky's Classroom podcast, which appears on the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast, because that's where we put it, because we're using the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast feed as kind of an incubator for this and soon to be a couple other podcasts, because it just kind of exposes people to these new shows we're trying to get out there. And Miss Becky has been in a dinosaur land, and she's been in the 1920s land, and she's been to cowboy land, and apparently Miss Becky is really into cowboys. She really makes a cowboy named Chet uncomfortable. Check into that podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode. Share the show with a friend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.